This is a podcast from thebuglepodcast.com.
The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to the Northern Hemisphere. I'm back on the correct side of the planet after my trip down south. Apologies for the lack of sub bugles in the last couple of weeks, but things have been rather hectic on both sides of the planet. We're now on our Easter break. I'm taking the Zoltz family to ancient Greece, or as they call it now, Greece, but we'll be mostly looking at the ancient stuff, whilst John is involved in a two-week celebrity drunken cribbage rampage with Clint Eastwood, Bridget Bardot, Barack Obama and at least five of the Olsen sisters. But here to keep you going is a good healthy chunk of my Satirist for Hire show recorded at the Sydney Comedy Store on the 25th of March. Or if you don't think it's good, it is at least healthy, can cure many minor ailments and some relationship difficulties, but only if you play it very loud on a ghetto blaster on public transport. That is scientifically unproven. If you enjoy this and want to see what it's like with pictures as well as sound, then do come to my live shows at the Udderbelly, 16th and 23rd of April, and the Election Night Special on the 7th of May, all of which will include not just me, but other guest comedians too, including on the 16th of April, Mark Steele, Nish Kumar and Chris Coltrane. All the details at the Udderbelly's website, and hopefully on satiristforhire.com. I've just got back, I'll check. I'm also starting a monthly Satirist for Hire residency at the Soho Theatre from May, so do come along to all of those shows. Or listen to them. I will be releasing them as a podcast, as well as satirising the living nuts out of everything live on the night. In the meantime, sit back and enjoy the sounds of Sydney. Unless you're doing something that requires you to stand up, in which case please don't sit back. Onion breath. So, who, that was, came from over there somewhere? Yes, these are the Tony Abbotts eating raw onions twice, I believe. Did it twice?
Yes.
I mean, to eat a whole raw onion with its skin on once might be considered unfortunate. To do so twice does appear to be careless or fucking mental. I mean, maybe that is what he's... Well, I think that is what Abbott is going for, by eating... A raw onion. He was on an onion farm, wasn't he? So I guess he's trying to show support for the Australian onion industry by eating an onion in a way that they're not really intending their onions to be eaten. But, I mean, it does make you think it's lucky he didn't go to a pig farm that day. Otherwise, it could have been... But I think maybe this is Tony Abbott sending a message to the world. By eating an onion with its skin on, basically saying, I will do absolutely fucking anything. I will do... I will eat an onion with its skin on. I will fire a nuclear weapon. That's the... I guess that's... With Abbott, you do have to take the positives. I know a lot of you... Do any Tony Abbott fans? It's great that I appeal to such a wide demographic. Yeah, I've got to take the positives with Tony Abbott. One... three-year terms. Now, I think that's why you voted him in the first place. Someone sent me an email saying, why did we vote? Why did Australia vote Tony Abbott in? I think it's... Well, what 3-year terms, people think, oh, politics is a bit boring. Let's have someone who's going to stir it up a bit. How much damage can one man do in 3 years? Two, he's not as bad as Hitler. And... yet... And three, you're only Australia. Let's cling to that. Let us cling to that, Sydney. If he was indeed President of America, I think we would all be dead by now. Pretty sure of that. Right, let's move on to the satire that you commissioned. A bumper crop of emails for the show. Now, the idea of this show is to, you could have, important political issues, national or local or international importance, satirised by me with my 15 years in showbiz experience. So I thought I was expecting some quite interesting email. This is Dane McMahon Squires here. Dear Andy, something that often keeps me awake at night is my uncertainty as to which of the local Australian crap birds is the crappiest bird. Oh, you've clearly struck a chord here.
fuck all that mining shit. No, this is the big one. Is it the noble rock dove, also known as the common pigeon, spreader of bird fancier's lung? Which, yes, says Dane, that is a real condition. Has anyone here got bird fancier's lung? Yes. Have you heard of it? Yeah, it is. I mean, I've checked it on Wikipedia. It is a, quote, a type of hypersensitivity pneumonitis caused by bird droppings. That is... You must really have to fancy that bird. Perhaps the crappiest bird is the core-mongering silver gull? No. Oh, you've misread the room here, mate. That is a silver gull kind of crowd. Please satirise each of the 828 extant species of avians residing in this country in order from least crap to most crap, as this will help build tension and excitement during your performance. Yeah, I would have done that had I not received some other emails as well, but please make sure I'm not off parking my breakfast during the recital of the top five. That's a pretty Australian sentence. Then you'd have to start again. So I'm just not sure I've got time for all 828. So I've chosen five Australian birds to satirise. Let's call them the top five. And I'm going to try and satirise them against the clock. Is it, who's got a stopwatch down the front? You got a stopwatch? No? No? Who wants to do the clock? Right. Okay, I'm going to try and set a world record now for the quickest time ever to satirise five different types of Australian bird species. Which I believe is currently held by Lenny Bruce. 45 minutes and 32 seconds. He went on a tangent about how the police were out to get him. So anyway... just started off with like one bit about the... Okay, ready? Start the clock. The Papuan frogmouth. What a shit frogmouth that is. There are several breeds of frogmouth, but this is the only one that feels the need to trumpet its ethnicity. Not like the tawny frogmouth or the marbled frogmouth. This frogmouth is basically stoking the fires of global nationalism. Wipe it out, Australia. Wipe it out. The Savannah nightjar... obviously a porn star bird. The uniform swiftlet. Man, what a shit swiftlet that is. Typical of the drab monochrome gloop of modern culture. The uniform swiftlet. No individuality, just churning out the same shit over and over again. As so many birds do. In fact, that was the bird that Nelly Furtado wrote the... I'm like a bird, I shit on people's cars, whatever the lyric was. The white-faced storm petrel. What a crap bird. A, it's racist. B, as a storm petrel, it revels in extreme weather conditions. It is bullshit, 42 centimetres of wasted wingspan for me. And the shy albatross. What the fuck is the point in being an albatross? If you're too shy to flash it about, be proud. Also known as the shy mollyhawk. Two names, what an indecisive bird. You can't have that as a bird. No wonder you've never made it as a top level bird, the shy albatross. And you have a near threatened conservation status. You deserve to be extinct. Stop the clock. 1 minute 37.6. Get him. Right. So let's move on to Mark Ostrin. Thanks for this. Tony Abbott's stupidity is now notorious and global, but Australians knew he was stupid long before he became an international joke. All publicity is good publicity. So how do you explain the facts? Oh, this is what I touched on earlier on, that more than 50% of Australians voted for him. So did anyone here vote for Tony Abbott? Are you lying? Well, that's less than 50%. So either this room is not representative of Australia as a whole, or that was the biggest piece of election fixing in history. But so how did Abbott... it seems to me that the way Abbott got into power was basically just a classic case of politics that started many years ago. So it started... in fact, the first time I came to Australia was about 2007, and it was about the time that Kevin Rudd, I think he'd just taken over from John Howard, and he'd gone into power running on a strong platform of not being John Howard, and, which is a pretty persuasive case to put to the electorate at the time. And then Julia Gillard... She got Rudd out of the way by saying, "I'm not Kevin Rudd." And then Rudd counter-ousted Gillard, running on a pretty powerful "I'm not Julia Gillard either" platform. And then Abbott came in saying, "I'm neither Kevin Rudd nor Julia Gillard." And Australia was like, and then when your election is about a year and a bit away, someone will win by just saying, "I am definitely not Tony Abbott." That is, it's a dance as old as democracy itself. And but do you think he's right that living in distant communities is a lifestyle choice? Or I know, because he got a lot of criticism for this, saying that we wanted basically to shut down the old Aboriginal communities because they're inconveniently far away from where things are more convenient. That sentence got out of control. And I guess in many ways, yes, it was a lifestyle. It is a lifestyle choice to live in places like that, albeit it was a lifestyle choice made about 40,000 years ago. And arguably not as much of a lifestyle choice as white people moving to Australia was. Albeit it was a lifestyle choice made by the British legal system involuntarily towards a load of naughty people. So, but no, that's the way the empire worked. We gave people a range of lifestyle choices. You can have A, smallpox and Christianity, B, just smallpox, C, you can give us all your natural resources, even in famines, or D, bang. And it's good to have a choice. Let's move on. Niharika Prasad. Andy, actuaries often get the short end of the stick. And mocked for having boring jobs. Please satirise actuaries and in the process make us sound interesting. Oh, fuck, that is high tariff. That is... Oh, man, that's... that is a tough call. So, any other actuaries in the house? No. They calculated that it wasn't worth the risk, clearly. Now, maybe... All that laughter will make me think I'm really wasting my life being an actuary. I don't know. So I never fully knew what actuaries were. So I'd always assumed... I'd always assumed it was just a basic resignation note from humanity. But it turns out it is an actual job here. For actuaries, mathematically evaluate the probability of events and quantify the contingent outcomes in order to minimise the impacts of financial losses associated with uncertain, undesirable events. But basically, you are dodgy bookmakers, aren't you? That's what you're doing. So have you used that information to bet on natural disasters or not? No? Right. Matthew Bartlett. Andy, I would like you to satirise potatoes. Oh, right, Jesus. Who's a potato fan here? Right. I think you've misjudged the vibe. Right. there are 5,000 varieties of potato worldwide, ranging from the Jersey Royal and the Desire to the roasts, the chip and the waffle. But you want me to take seriously? You want me to take down the world's fourth largest food crop? Let's take down the big guys. Why not maize or wheat or rice? I have no beef with them. I mean, literally, I have no beef with them. I don't think you need a staple with a good steak. Now, anyway. Well, let's stick it to the spud, right? He's commissioned it. I've got to stick it to the spud. Who thinks the potatoes are the devil's vegetable? Yeah, you're right on, brothers. Who thinks they pose the greatest threat to humanity at the moment? Oh, right. We are struggling with this, mate. Who thinks they have absolutely no place in a salad? Yeah, take that, Vladimir Putin. You fucking Russian bullshit. Now, So there's a lot of problems with the potato. They're too long to cook. I haven't got time for that. I live in a busy world. We live in the world of Twitter, where everything has to be done instantly. Everything. People complain about Twitter being symptomatic of the ephemeral nature of modern life. What can you really say in 140 characters that's worth saying? But actually, it's a lot longer than it used to be. It was only 40 characters when it was first launched, way back in Old Testament times, when God was writing the Ten Commandments and he was tweeting them out. Only 40 characters max. Thou shalt not covet thy neighbour's... Oh, shit. I've only got two left. Ox. It's going to have to be ox. What I would say, as Aristotle himself said, there are three things in life you can't hurry: love, cooking a potato, and vendettas. So, I think in many ways the potato is emblematic of European exploitation of conquered lands around the world, because it all originated in South America and was brought back by the Spanish. Here's a fact from Wikipedia. According to conservative estimates, the introduction of the potato was responsible for a quarter of the growth in old world population and urbanisation between 1700 and 1900. So, you say hooray, I say that is bad. Because statistically, that means the potato made it far more likely for both Mr. and Mrs. Hitler to be born. So, without the potato, we might never have had Nazism. Let's move on. Caroline Christie. Please satirise the Australian cricket team. Trying to get me lynched. Australia's cricket team clearly a bit better than England's at the moment, over the last 140 years or whatever. But life is not all about cricket, sadly. And let's do a... I think it's time, because I've taken a lot of shit since I've been here about how shit England are at cricket. But let's do a tot-up of our nation's relative strength. I'll give you cricket, 1-0 to Australia, but it's not all about cricket. Let's go for category two, words. William Shakespeare, greatest playwright of all time, versus cricket commentator Michael Slater. 1-1. 1-1, Australia. Politics. Winston Churchill. Beat the Nazis with just an overcoat and a cigar. Shape the modern world as we know it. Versus Tony Abbott. 2-1. A clear 2-1. Inventors. George Stephenson invented the train, revolutionised the way that the industrial world works. Versus... this guy here, what have you invented, mate? Fuck all! You've invented fuck all! Three-one England. Romance. We have shut up. But you qualify for Australia on residency. Now, anyway. Romance. Lord Byron versus Rolf Harris. 4-1. 4-1. 4-1. Monarchs. The Queen versus the Queen. We'll call it half a point each. But you lose half a point because you never fucking comes here anymore. 4.5-1. And finally, music. The Rolling Stones versus Justin Bieber. Now, I know technically he's Canadian, but it's basically the same. You have slightly less violent sports, more barbecues and fewer snowmen. So there we go. Greatest nation in the world. That's what David Cameron described Britain as, the greatest nation in the world. Yeah, there we go. Who thinks Britain is the greatest nation in the world? Who thinks it's Australia? Who thinks it's fundamentally impossible to tell? It's very difficult to tell. Well, politicians always say this. What was that? I missed that. USA, or American presidents will always say, every single American president will say, we're the greatest nation in the world. But in fact, according to the latest UN rankings, I think America's 15th, Britain is 18th, and Australia is 54th. But they've got Costa Rica top. That's just because they've done things like not mutilate the environment and not start illegal wars. I think that's really rewarding negative play, and I don't like that. Well, I think we can learn from sports, and because we can learn from, say, gymnastics and diving, where you lose the best and worst marks from the judges and they average out the rest. So I think we should have a new scheme for judging how great nations are using this. So I think you should discount a nation's worst atrocity, but also its greatest achievement. So under this new scheme, Spain, for example, would lose both the systematic extermination of indigenous peoples in South America, but it would also lose the siesta. Would Picasso have been so good at painting if he hadn't been properly rested? Of course he fucking wouldn't. And also under this new scheme, Britain would lose both the British Empire and the British Empire. Yeah, let's move on. Oh, Nathan, Corey and Rebecca. Thanks for this. Hi, Andy. Can you do an Australian-themed pun run for your 7 p.m. show? I think I'm the only comedian in the world who can get a round of applause for threatening puns. But,
tell John about it.
Yeah. Some of this gig must be very confusing to people who do not listen to the audio. I have to say, Australia, that I'm not sure about doing puns. I'm not sure you're equipped to deal with it as a crowd. Equipped. Anyway, right. Well, I'm very glad I came to Australia. I wasn't sure if I'd make it at one point. I had made plans a year ago, but hadn't finalised everything. I was worried I had delayed too long. But the hotel, I have to say, the hotels are lovely here. One was a craft-themed hotel, handicraft-themed hotel. It had a knitted toilet cover. There was wool on my loo. My son was very worried about all the dangerous animals here. Crocodiles, snakes, spiders. I even read that you can catch a fatal illness from large humped ungulates. You've got to be careful of camel-borne diseases. Camel-borne. But I came here, of course, for the cricket. Didn't go well for England. We had a loss. We had another loss. And then we had our win. I bumped into a South African journalist today who'd been in the game yesterday, and he'd mumbled that he'd jumped up and down so hard in the excitement that he'd hurt one of his leg joints. But I couldn't hear what he'd said, got quite a funny accent. And I said, what did you hurt? I asked. And he replied, I said knee. I said knee. Some of you are laughing. ho, ho, ho! But this guy, he can barely bring himself to look at me. He obviously thinks it's absolutely pathetic. Still, no more Aussie place name puns. I promise. I've got to have some set up punchline jokes. Shows are Kangaroo One if I need to. The last time I was here in Australia, I was with my family. Went to a restaurant, very embarrassing. My wife hates desserts, particularly crunchy ones, quite vociferously, in fact. All got out of hand when the dessert trolley came round. Shh, I said, we're in Australia. You can't boomerangs. But it was a very strange restaurant. They were serving a new dish of it was a kind of roasted bird with plum sauce wrapped in a German tabloid newspaper, and they were obviously hadn't been selling too well, so they're really trying to sell it hard. So they're really giving the duck-billed platter a push. The end. Right, we're towards the end of the gig. I'm sorry if I've done most of the emails, but not quite all of them. Tiff Harris wanted me to satirise cakes. I just think cakes are just unrealistically optimistic as a foodstuff. Camouflaging the inevitability of suffering and the inescapability of death. Avoid them. Richard Thorek.
Yep.
Pandas was your backup topic. Get rid of them. They've had their chance. In fact, they have had. There are too many species in the world. 50 should be plenty. I blame David Attenborough. What an absolute arsehole, David Attenborough. Oh, sure. Made an entire career out of zebra snuff movies and insect porn. Filth. The worst man that's ever worked for the BBC. But I think we should kill pandas while we have the chance. It's kill or be killed out there, a survivor of the fittest. And but you know, why do they find it so hard to breed? I don't know, pandas. But you'd have thought, Clive Palmer, if he can afford to build a replica Titanic, as he used to be able to do. I saw the headline the other day, Palmer puts plans for replica Titanic on ice. And I thought, there's some headline writer. Some headline writer, this is the actual, I'm not claiming credit for that joke, but I love the idea that he announced these plans, what, 2 or 3 years ago, and clearly a headline writer said, I reckon this will never get built. I'm just going to have to wait for the moment. And has been sitting on this ever since. But if Clive Palmer could afford to build a replica Titanic, then he can afford to develop some irresistible lingerie for pandas to help them breed, surely. Right, I'm going to have to move. I think we're done. We are just about done. And yeah, no, because there's another show in at 9 o'clock. Because I'm all about the dollar.
It's the same audience.
Oh, right, is it? That'll be the same jokes as well, don't it? Mark Glassman.
Yeah.
Please will you satirise my colleague Aaron Cliff? He used to have dreadlocks down to his arse, amongst other things. I don't understand him, and if there's one thing I've learnt is we should always poke fun at things we don't understand. Poke fun at or set fire to, generally one or the other. Aaron Cliff, please will you satirise my colleague Mark Glassman? You guys. It has been an absolute pleasure coming here to talk to you. Thanks you all for coming. I'll see you all again. Cheers. Thank you.